Hi, this is St Anthony here with the first in what I hope will be a series of podcasts looking closely at the careers of Celtic players from the past. This is meant to be a quick wee podcast which people will hopefully enjoy listening to, and not as long as the meanderings of Harry Brady, Eddie Pearson and myself when discussing current Celtic matters. A wee bit of nostalgia, they say, is good for the soul, so here we go. The first up in the new series is a legend, and that was Paul McStay. So when's the first time we heard of Paul McStay? In 1978 there was a photo in the Celtic View with Willie McStay, Paul, his dad and Sean Fallon. Paul was aged around 14 at the time, signing an S form, while Willie, who was slightly older, was part of the Scotland youth setup and was signing a pro form and went on to play in the reserve team with Charlie Nicholas, John Halpin and Matt Reid, who were all signing pro forms at that time. The name was very well known to Celtic fans because of the McStay Celtic dynasty, in which Paul's great uncles, Willie McStay Sr. and Jimmy McStay, had been Celtic players, very famous Celtic players in the early part of the 20th century, with Jimmy McStay actually managing Celtic between 1940 and 1945. The first time we really came across Paul was in 1980, when he played at Wembley for Scotland Schoolboys, in a very memorable game in which Scotland won 5-4. Paul was the captain of the team, scored twice on the day and was absolutely outstanding. The reason why people remember this game so much was it was a rare live TV game at the time, which was very unusual in those days. It was during the summer when people were wanting to watch a game of football and had huge TV viewing figures watching the game. Celtic fans were now aware of the name and were anticipating him in the first team in the years to come. In 1981, Paul made his reserve team debut and became a regular in the team at the age of 16. He was playing with very experienced players at the time, such as Peter Latchford, John Doyle, Mick Conroy and Jim Duffy, all very good professionals who would have had an enormous influence on him. That Celtic reserve team were an absolutely outstanding team and were unbeaten for almost two seasons in the reserve league. From 1980 to 1982, there was a wonderful crop of players who broke through into the first team. Charlie Nicholas, Pat Bonner, Matt Reid, Danny Craney, John Halpin, Davy Moyes, Willie McStay, Jim Duffy and John Weir. But perhaps the best of them all was to come when Paul broke through into the first team. In January 1982, he made his Celtic debut in a Scottish Cup tie against Queen of the South. This was a very low-profile game, which Celtic won comfortably by 4-0. It's best remembered for two things. One, a rare goal by the great Danny McGrain, and also John Halpin, who was another debutant on the day along with Paul, scored the fourth goal. If you've got a good memory, you may remember that the Rangers' end was shut that day due to burst pipes in the severe cold weather, and the terracing steps were icy, so everybody crammed into the jungle and the Celtic end to watch. And Paul's debut was described as promising. 1 week later, he made his league debut in a very difficult fixture against Aberdeen at Pittodrie. This was a great Aberdeen team with such legends as Jim Leighton, Willie Miller, Alec McLeish and Gordon Strachan playing for them. And both teams were fighting out for the title in a two-horse race. Celtic had injury problems on the day and Paul was required to play. He was only 17 years old and he scored a brilliant goal in a 3-1 win. And from that moment forward, Paul McStay became a first-team regular. In the last game of the 1982 season against St Mirren at Parkhead, there was tremendous pressure on Celtic to win. They needed a win in order to lift the league title, and Paul gave a very assured performance in a 3-0 win, which wasn't as comfortable as it sounds because all the goals came in the second half. On the day, he was described as playing as a veteran on a very nervous occasion, when Aberdeen beat Rangers 4-0 at Pittodrie to put the pressure right on Celtic, but Celtic delivered the goods in the second half. A lot of players, when they break into the first team, get a bedding in period, or they actually play and get dropped again into the reserves. But from this moment onwards, Paul McStay would remain in the Celtic first team for the next 15 years. In the 1982-83 season, he had rave reviews, scoring two magnificent goals in consecutive games early on in the season. One was against Hibs at Parkhead, and the other one was at Tannadice against Dundee United. Both of them were net-bursting shots from outside the area. This was clearly a player with great class and great potential who was going on to great things. Paul played in a memorable win in Amsterdam when Celtic beat Ajax in the European Cup, and followed that up with scoring on his Old Firm debut against Rangers in October 1982, when he was described as the best player in the park. He scored one goal after winning a ball in midfield, sending Murdo McLeod clear and then following up to score the rebound, and he created another with an absolutely brilliant tackle at the edge of the penalty area before sliding a perfect pass to Frank McGarvey to score. Celtic won 3-2 in a very close game. A matter of weeks later, he played in the League Cup final win over Rangers on a very, very wet day. A game that Celtic should have won by far more than 2-1, and the only downside on that day was that Paul received an injury and was substituted. Sadly, Celtic were in course for the League and Cup double in 1983, but there was a big disappointment when the results collapsed in springtime. An injury to Tommy Burns in January and the Charlie Nicholas transfer frenzy had affected the team badly, and they threw it away in the last game of the season, although they did beat Rangers at Ibrox, but Dundee United took the league title on the last day. 1983-84 saw Paul with a new manager. Davy Hay took over from Billy McNeil. He made his Scotland debut for the first team against Uruguay in a 2-0 win at Hampden, and left Jock Stein, who was manager at the time, raving about his performance. From that moment on, he became a regular in the Scotland squad for years to come. Paul and Willie McStay became one of the select few sets of brothers to play for Celtic in a competitive game. Both of them actually played in a 2-1 win over Rangers in September, which must have been a really proud day for the McStay family, as Paul and Willie were pictured in the newspaper pages, arms round each other, brothers playing for Celtic in a win over their greatest rivals. There was a decent European run, a great game against Sport in Lisbon, but disappointing against Nottingham Forest when Brian Clough proved a master tactician by attacking Celtic at Celtic Park on the flanks, which were seen as Celtic's weak spot. Paul and Willie McStay both remarkably scored against Rangers in a 3-0 win in April 1984, a truly remarkable achievement which may never be equalled. There was disappointment at the end of the season being trophyless after having lost two cup finals by very narrow margins. Paul had a great game against Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup final and scored in Celtic's 2-1 defeat. There were rumours of Inter Milan being willing to spend £2 million on a 20-year-old Paul, and the English sides were also rumoured to be after his talents. In an STV sports programme focusing on the McStay family, their mother remained adamant that Paul would not leave, and that was to be the case for the rest of his career. In 1984-85, Paul came to prominence international level when he scored a stunning goal against Iceland at Hampden in a World Cup qualifier in a 3-0 win for Scotland. Scotland followed that up to beat Spain 3-1 at Hampden, and it was regarded as being the best Scottish team for many years. He had a great game against Rapid Vienna in a 1984 European Cup Winners' Cup tie at Parkhead and almost scored a stunning goal. A Davy Proven corner was cleared to the edge of the penalty area, and in the one go, Paul controlled it on his chest, let the ball drop and lobbed the ball over the goalkeeper, who was lost, but sadly the ball landed on top of the net rather than in the net, and what would have been an absolutely magnificent goal. There was a sad ending in Europe, as Celtic were eliminated at Old Trafford by Rapid Vienna, and were denied the chance of getting to the final to play Everton in Rotterdam. That must have been a huge regret for not only for Paul, but for Celtic fans of that generation. In May 1985, Celtic reached the Scottish Cup final against Dundee United, with Davy Hay under great pressure to win a trophy after two trophyless seasons. In a very controversial moment, Davy Hay substituted Paul for Pierce O'Leary. Pierce O'Leary went into defence to allow Roy Aitken to move into midfield. Aitken was absolutely tremendous. Celtic roared back to win the Cup 2-1, and in a very unusual achievement again, both McStay brothers won medals in that final. In the 1985-1986 season, Paul scored a late equaliser at Tynecastle in the opening game of the season, which was to be a very important goal by the season's end. After a bright start, Celtic's form dipped badly from October to November, with Hearts, Aberdeen and Dundee United all above them in the league. but he was part of the Scotland side which qualified for the Mexico World Cup in 1986 after beating Australia over two legs. A 2-0 win on New Year's Day against Rangers was a tonic, and Paul and Tommy Burns were the inspiration on the day. And from January, Celtic went on a long unbeaten run, however there were too many drawn games. Paul had a good game in the 4-4 draw against Rangers at Ibrox, when 10 men Celtic fought back for a draw after Willie McStay had been sent off. In the run-in, it was down to Hearts and Celtic. On April the 5th, Paul scored the late winner as injury hit Celtic stayed in the title hunt with a 2-1 win against St Mirren at Love Street. By the last game of the season, Celtic had to win by 3 goals again at Love Street and hoped that Dundee could beat Hearts at Dens Park. Incredibly, on an unforgettable day, Celtic were 4-0 up at half-time. Paul created Celtic's second goal for Mo Johnson with a delightful pass and was instrumental in what's probably the greatest Celtic goal of all time. A flowing move down the right-hand side, started by Danny McGrain, carried on by Aitken, McStay and McClare for Johnson to score again. If that wasn't enough, then Paul almost ripped a net out with a shot from the edge of the area after a fine running cut back by Owen Archdeacon to make it 4-0. In the second half, the thoughts turned to Dens Park. Roars went up from the Celtic fans as news filtered through of Albert Kidd's now legendary two-goal heroics. Celtic were champions, but very unlikely ones at that, and many fans cast their thoughts back to the season's opening game at Tynecastle when Paul's last-gasp equaliser saved the day. Just how important a goal that was. Paul's reward was to travel to the Mexico World Cup, but it was a bad experience as the Scots were eliminated by a very physical Uruguay side in controversial fashion. In 1986-87, Celtic once again opened the season well with McStay, McClare and Mo Johnson all earning rave reviews and international recognition. However, the team hadn't been strengthened in the summer and cracks began to show. Form dipped in the new year and there were many Celtic players out of contract and a lot of unrest. A good lead was thrown away in the league and at the end of the season, McClare, Johnson, McAnally and Murdo McLeod all departed. However, the sensational news that summer was that Davy Hay was sacked and Billy McNeil returned as manager. Billy McNeil had been Paul's mentor and now returned in the centenary season to build a new side around his talents. A plethora of new players were brought in and were to do well, such as Stark, Morris, Walker and McCarthy. The launching pad was a 1-0 win over Rangers in August, when Paul was the best man in the park, the architect of Celtic's win on a very warm day. He had now found a consistency in his game and the fans began to refer to him by a new nickname, the Maestro, due to Paul orchestrating the Celtic midfield. One of the highlights of the season was a 2-0 New Year win over Rangers when his swivelling pass from the middle of the pitch sent Chris Morris racing down the right to set up Frank McAvenny for an easy finish. It was brilliantly created by Paul, who was now at the peak of his powers. There are two goals which I wish to recall which Paul scored around that time but were not televised. The first one was days before Christmas, with Celtic struggling at Brockville, holding a narrow one-goal lead late in the game, when Paul strode forward to fire in a 30-yarder which almost tore through the net. Then in mid-January, Celtic beat Hibs 2-0 at Parkhead, and his goal was a thing of beauty. His pass sent Joe Miller scurrying down the right-hand side, and when Joe cut the ball back to the edge of the area, Paul lashed it into the net, fairly exploding the ball past Andy Gorham. It's no exaggeration to say that Paul McStay did not have a bad game that season. In March, the league was all but won with two away wins at Ibrox and Pittodrie, with Paul's goal at Ibrox will live long in the memory, a glorious left-foot volley from just inside the area. Perhaps his best game that season was against Hearts in the Scottish Cup final at Hampden. With Celtic a goal down, Paul created a wealth of chances for Celtic strikers, but to no avail as they were all missed. Then in a dramatic ending, Mark McGee and Andy Walker scored to put Celtic into the final. The 1988 final against Dundee United was a repeat of the 1985 final, with United leading 1-0 but again blowing the lead, with Frank McAvenny this time being the hero with two goals. At the season's end, Paul was awarded both the Football Writers and the Players' Player of the Year, and no one else had come close to winning it. In 1988-89, much was expected of the Celtic team, but the club did not push on and allowed Rangers to take the initiative with some more expensive English signings. The side never really recovered from a 5-1 defeat at Ibrox and suffered a bad start to the season. They did improve in the new year with a good Scottish Cup run, and Paul scored perhaps his best ever goal for Celtic at Dens Park in February. Running from midfield, he took a long ball outside the area, delightfully lifted the ball over a Dundee defender, and then lashed home a left foot shot past Dundee keeper Geddes. Thankfully, that one was caught in camera for posterity. The Scottish Cup was retained in May 1989 against Rangers in a closely fought encounter. Paul suffered a bad injury during the game, courtesy of a shocking tackle by a Rangers player called Mel Sterland, but all turned out well with Joe Miller scoring the winner in a 1-0 win. 1989-90 was to be a watershed season. The Mo Johnson affair that summer was badly handled, and it set Celtic back years. Experienced players left the club and were not replaced. Tommy Burns, Mark McGee, Billy Stark, Frank McAvenny and Mick McCarthy all departed, and when Roy Aitken left in January 1990, Paul was required to fill the void as captain. He was the only choice. He was 25, at the peak of his career, and was the main source of inspiration to the team. A shocker of a league season meant no European qualification, although the team did make it through to a third consecutive Scottish Cup final. Sadly, they lost a poor game in penalties to Aberdeen in the final, which denied Paul some early silverware as captain. Between 1990 and 1994, Billy McNeil first of all departed in 1991 with Liam Brady and Lou McCarrie being the next two Celtic managers. It wasn't until Tommy Burns returned as Celtic manager in 1994 that Celtic began to improve. They reached the League Cup final in November at Ibrox against lowly Raith Rovers. Sadly, Celtic underperformed on the day, and when the match went to the lottery of penalties, it was Paul who missed in sudden death for Raith to win the cup. This was a devastating blow. 4 days later at Easter Road in a league game, Celtic fans unfurled a huge banner emblazoned with "Paul, you'll never walk alone." The fans' faith in Paul was rewarded at the end of the season when Celtic beat Airdrie 1-0 in the Scottish Cup final at Hampden, with Paul at last getting to lift a trophy as Celtic captain, which was actually presented by royalty on the day. Princess Alexandra was far more pleasant and gracious than some of the stuffed suits from the SFA who have presented that trophy to future Celtic captains. Paul had a new lease of life under Burns. In August 1994, Celtic beat Rangers 2-0 at Ibrox, courtesy of cracking goals by McStay and John Collins. Paul nearly brought the house down in the second half when he nutmegged Scotland's new record transfer man, Duncan Ferguson, and smashed a shot against the post, with Ferguson falling over like a donkey on ice. Tommy Burns now brought some great foreign talents to Celtic Park. Pierre Van Hooijdonk, Andreas Thom, George Cadet and Paolo Di Canio were all wonderful talents, and in 1996 and 1997, Celtic finished desperately close in second place to Rangers, but far too many draws cost them. On the 5th of April 1997, Paul was injured and substituted in a 1-1 draw against Raith Rovers at Stats Park. No one was to know at the time, but that was the last ever game he was to play for Celtic, or even as a professional, and he retired in the summer of 1997 at the age of 33. A full house had turned out at Parkhead in December 1995 for his testimonial against Manchester United to allow the supporters to pay tribute to a great Celtic player. What kind of player was Paul McStay? Paul was one for the purists, a magnificent first touch who also had great control in tight spaces, a magnificent shot with either foot and a vision to see a pass which other players could not. He wasn't blessed with great pace, but like all the true greats, he was always one a step ahead with a sharp football brain. Paul McStay remained loyal to Celtic during difficult times and is held in the highest regard by a generation of Celtic fans who revere him. He was Celtic's number 8, and his name will always be synonymous with that number of on his shorts. Paul was due to bring his autobiography out a few years ago, but never did. He really should bring it out now, as there are thousands of Celtic fans like myself who are dying to read his story in greater detail. The word is used very loosely these days, but Paul McStay is a genuine Celtic legend. There are places I remember. Still can recall, some are dead and
stop and think about them. In my life, I love you more. About them. In my life, I love you more.